All right. So I'm joined here today by one of the up-and-coming owners of one of the new up-and-coming teams here, Levine Family Racing, Mr. Bob Levine. Thank you so much for joining me here today.
Glad to do it, Trey. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, it's really good to talk to you guys, kind of watching your team progress from 2011 with David Starr and everything to where you all are now. Really kind of one of the feel-good stories of NASCAR, I would think.
It is kind of interesting progression, isn't it? It was ups and downs, and the first 5 years we were just part time.
Yeah, with McDowell, correct?
I got into it to really help David.
Yeah,
and then I liked it, competitive me. And then so much so that, you know, I got somebody, Scott Speed, for the second year and half the third year, and then filled in for the rest of that year. Then started with Michael McDowell for 4 years.
Yeah.
And Michael was a great driver, and he helped us move forward in advance even into our first full-time season.
Yep, with Casey Kane, or was it with... It was with McDowell, right? He had the first season.
Yeah, first full-time season is when we leased a, they went into the charter system.
Yeah.
That's when we also switched to RCR to Chevrolet from Ford.
Yeah. Y'all had that Penske alliance, I think, at first.
Yes, we had, with 2 years, we were three when we first got it with Roush. And you know, essentially we were just buying parts and getting motors from Doug Yates.
Yeah.
We had an opportunity to go over to Penske and do some testing for those guys, and we were still part time, and so that worked well for them because they really aren't set up for a mass producing. We tested for them, we ran, we got our cars from them, still had Yates engines, and that was a good relationship until we needed to go full time.
Yeah,
and they just couldn't supply us with everything we needed, so just by attrition, we moved to Chevrolet because the 78 car had left RCR and Chevrolet and went over to Toyota.
Toyota. Yeah, it's kind of a cycle a little bit. Like
I hate to say that, but maybe it is, Trey.
Yeah.
So we followed them over there and, went through the body change with Chevrolet, and that's when we really started learning how to race, full time, and we have grown a lot, including this being our fourth year.
Yeah,
in the last three and a piece years, that was our. I guess we kind of made this step forward and more of a commitment to what we want to do and try to do, and that's kind of the progression.
Yeah.
The good, bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, that kind of answers my first question a little bit. I was going to ask you, with a relatively new team, what kind of drew you to NASCAR, but you said helping David Starr, kind of another Texas local. So that's kind of cool. I didn't know that.
Yes, it was. In fact, our company had bought a condo there at the Lone Star Tower, and I, as a birthday present, and it may have been in 2001, got a gift from a birthday to go to the Team Texas Driving School.
Oh, wow.
And, that's run by David's uncle, or was.
Oh, yeah. I think I remember hearing about that somewhere.
Yeah, and so through Mike, I met David when I moved into the tower there, and David actually helped us move furniture and things in, and so Sharon and I sponsored some of his truck races then, and he was getting in some Xfinity races. And, David's just a personable person.
Yeah.
And obviously a Texan.
Yeah, that definitely helps out.
And he also helped my grandson, Michael, get into late models driving down in Houston.
I saw that, yeah. I think he was racing in the regional series around here.
Yes.
And he drove the 95, I think, in the 95 late model.
Well, and also in the 95 in the ARCA series.
Yeah.
Because he was going to Baylor, so he started late.
Yeah.
And But to go back, kind of regress for a second, when I got out of college in Florida, DuPont moved Sharon and I to South Carolina.
Right around Darlington?
We lived in Camden, and we started going to, you know, knew nothing about motorsports, but, you know, I was a speed freak.
Yeah.
And my wife went to work for a Chevrolet dealership to finish school and still going to school there at the University of South Carolina. And we bought a secondhand Corvette because we had a terrible Chevrolet that hardly got us from Florida to South Carolina. We started going to the racetracks and watching Richard Petty and those drivers race at Darlington,
of course,
Rockingham, and Charlotte.
Yeah, those were the golden triangle a little bit of the Carolina tracks. You got Rockingham was definitely a fan favorite, as is and is still a fan favorite. So that's kind of cool to see those guys. That's kind of a good introduction into racing to get to go to those three tracks, three very famous tracks.
Yes, I mean, it was great. And, you know, I haven't been back since then, except several years ago when we started racing at Darlington. I hadn't been back from essentially 69.
Yeah, back when Petty was driving the Ford, I think.
Yeah. So, in fact, Richard and Petty and I were talking Sunday at the track, you know, about it and how it changes and, you know, the changes in drivers. I said, yeah, man, it goes back to you. You were my hero. And growing up in the sport and watching it. And then we left South Carolina, went back to Florida. And for a lot of years, just we started a business in 77. And, you know, so we've been in business for 40 years, 30 some years here in Texas. And so it's just, you know, making a living and starting a business. And so then gradually started getting back into the racing and going to the races and taking my daughter. My daughter was a NASCAR fan coming up, only got one child. And she's kind of the tomboy in the family to serve as my daughter and my son.
That's pretty cool. She's a NASCAR fan.
Well, it was. And in fact, I can remember one year she come, Dad, you know, I really like this, you know, new rookie driver. I think he's really going to be good. And I hadn't got back into it yet. And I said, oh, okay, you know, what's his name? His name is Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, okay, you know, I'll try to remember to follow him. Well, obviously, and I've told Jimmy that story often because she still is a JJ fan through and through.
Yeah. And
you go in her office, at our construction office, and Jimmy Johnson diecast and autograph stuff all over her office.
I think she was pretty accurate, though, on her prediction. He did do all right.
He was pretty good, right?
He had a pretty good career.
I wish I had that record.
Yeah, and with the alliance you have now, I think this team is steadily progressing. I think that they can get to where they can contend. Like, I was just looking at some of the results here. I see you had a couple of top 20 finishes in a row. With these type of finishes around 16th, 17th, the playoffs kind of come into question. How much would that mean, kind of with your first year with Toyota, to make the playoffs? How much would that really mean to this team, I guess?
We do goals and we set goals. I've kind of been that way all my life, setting goals and trying to be realistic. And I really set that goal for 2019.
Yeah.
And not 2018. So it really would be, you know, it's not impossible. You know, obviously, we're finding out more. You know, Matt's a great wheel guy.
I think so, too.
And, you know, just a great person.
Yeah, very personable.
Yes, he fits the team and mine and Sharon's, you know, personality, how we want to treat the fans. And because I think yesterday or the day before, like I was tweeting it, fans are as important as our employees. They're both. We got to have them both.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And we want them to come. We want them to be engaged. You know, I enjoy visiting with them in the garage when I get a chance, and not trying to work on business, because my goal is to continue to make us better, because believe it or not, we're not even close to being happy with any full race we've had. We haven't raced to our capabilities unless you take out, if you take out Daytona, we had a good car.
Yeah, I think y'all had the best car that day. Y'all led 49 laps, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was close. And then when you walk away from that, you know, the first race, it was bittersweet because we left all the points there, you know, where we finished, and it hurt.
Yeah.
We did the same thing with Casey last year.
Daytona, in the July race.
Top 10, and it happened to us, so you went away with that same feeling of had a good car but got nothing to show for it, except we went away knowing, okay, what we control, we think we did a good job.
Yeah. I think y'all...
And then we went to Atlanta, and we had a decent car there and felt pretty good about it, and we got run into on pit row.
I think I remember that. Was it... who was it that ran into y'all? Was it...
Three.
It was Dillon, Austin Dillon.
Yeah, the crew chief cleared him all the way out, and we were right beside him, and he just banged our left rear quarter panel, pushed it into the tire. We went out, green flag started, we were smoking, we had to come in, pull it out, take the tire off, and it put us three laps down.
I remember, I remember correctly, y'all were near the top 10 for most of the day, like 13th, 14th type of area.
I don't think on Atlanta, I don't think we were that close, Trey. I really don't. I don't remember, but we had gotten our car better. And so I'm not even going to say we weren't, but I just didn't remember that. So that didn't have us a good feeling.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So, you know, then on to Vegas. And, you know, we still had issues there. And right off the top of my head, I can't remember what happened in Vegas. I don't remember where we finished. But it goes back to. But we were gaining. You know, we had decent speed, and our probably next best car was when we got to Phoenix.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember Jeff Gordon and them were kind of talking about the team in the booth and what kind of good run they were having.
So, yeah, we were running top 15, top 12.
Yeah. That might be the race I was thinking of, Phoenix.
Okay.
Yeah,
because we had, in fact, we had a good qualifying going until McDowell Suarez decided to have an on-the-track squabble. We were right behind both of them.
Yeah, I never got to see the footage of what led to that whole ordeal, but I heard that with group qualifying being the way it is, it's really important to not run into traffic, and that's what happened.
It's a mile track and shorter. It isn't as dramatic as the bigger track.
Yeah, like Las Vegas.
Because you don't have as much drafting like Phoenix.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody wants a clean lap. So you're not worried about draft. And so we just was behind Suarez and McDowell. McDowell did something. In fact, I didn't see it. I saw a replay but not when it happened. And so all of a sudden, our laps kind of broke off. We had to go around because Suarez just parked the car, was waiting on McDowell, and we were behind McDowell.
I did see that, yeah.
So we had to essentially swerve and miss him, and, you know, you don't do that on a Q lap.
No, that's kind of unnecessary, I would think.
So we started way back, but then we gained up. You know, very well. And then we had a hose clamp come off our alternator cooler.
Oh, really?
And lost power.
Yeah, these cars are so much electrically, like they're more.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So we had a good car. Came in, fixed it, went back out, but, you know, now we had to fix it under green.
Yeah, and that's
costly. So now we finished 28.
Yeah.
And so that's the killer. Probably the first one we got close was, that we felt, was Fontana. we finished.
I think 18th, if I'm remember
yes,
correctly.
I think so. You know, we were lead lap, and that's difficult for a smaller team at Fontana.
Yeah.
So, yes, we were lead lap. And because I guess in Vegas, we must have been 21st.
I think so, yeah. 21st is what I'm seeing here on Racing Reference.
Okay, great. Because so Fontana was, decent. Because we had a good car, we had some pit issues, and then the same way we had some Sunday, but we knew we had a decent car, and he ran it up the 13th, and he kind of surprised him when he caught the 18, and I think he surprised Kyle also in the spotter, and hey, you know, he's the class of the field.
Yeah, it's been difficult to beat that 18 car this year.
And so, you know, I think he was having a tougher day, but I figured that Matt was going to try to pass him on the last two laps. We caught him right at the end of stage two.
Yeah, was that towards like the end of like the pit cycles and everything?
Yeah, well, that was right. That was the stage two, because we'd had a long green flag run, and we had really, we were really, really good on green flag, long runs.
Yeah.
So, then we came in. We lost places on our pit stop. Just not nailing it.
Yeah.
And so then it kind of went downhill, and we wound up 20th, so nobody was happy with the 20th. So we kind of keep leaving him on the table, but we just got to get it here shortly because all the parts and pieces are there, I believe, to be consistent in around the 15th to 18th. And so we're optimistic of Bristol.
Yeah.
Matt's good at Bristol.
I think, where he got his career best finish, if I remember correctly, in the 83.
There,
yeah. Yeah, and he was the interview was very memorable, I think.
Yes, I remember, because he beat us.
Yeah.
And he didn't have the best equipment in the world. And I'm like, gosh, he kicked our rear.
Yeah. So to kind of segue into, we were talking a little bit about qualifying. With the new changes we've seen and everything, and kind of the new tweaks we saw, overall, are you guys kind of happy with what they've done here with the new tweaks to qualifying?
Now you're going to get me in trouble, I'm sure.
No, of course not. This is... You can say anything you'd like to. This I have nothing to do with Steve or Brian France or any of those guys. So anything you want to talk about,
what they did is just requires more oversight, but it's still going to be a draft.
Absolutely.
And if it's a draft, then it's the luck of the draw. Who's up front? Who decides to go out? Who wants to go with them? And so it isn't. It's like a Fontana.
Yeah.
That was the draft, and we had a good lap going, and a car blocked us.
Yeah.
When in reality, if he'd have got behind us, he'd have probably been faster than us, because he'd have been behind us and used us as the draft.
Yeah. The way I see it, like, if they want to do, like, group qualifying and everything, why not just let them race, Let them race for their spots.
Sure.
Yeah.
I thought, hey, what about we just go out and manufacture groups?
That's a good idea, too. Like, that's a little bit more logistically kind of easier for the teams, because you guys can all – and then they can take the times of the fastest manufacturers and then let them go out and
– let them go ahead and do individual times. But you're not fighting against.
Yeah. That's a good idea, too.
You're going to swap around, and you're going to change, and you're going to let some of the cars, because the first one is going to be the slowest.
Yeah. That's why nobody wants to be the first out there, like going out onto the track. Nobody wants to be first.
No. So, NASCAR really called us out, and the drivers out, because they didn't go out. They were waiting.
Yeah. They're kind of in a box, though.
They set that up.
They put them in that box a little bit, because if you go out first, you're not going to win the pole.
We all are competitive, and to set it up that way and then think somebody wants to jump out there first, it's ludicrous.
Yeah, absolutely.
It ain't going to work.
No. I mean,
because everybody is competitive and wants to be fastest. That's what qualifying is for.
Yeah. One compromise I saw that I kind of liked, though, not to cut you off or anything, I apologize for that.
Okay.
One kind of compromise I saw was from, I think, Denny Hamlin said that why not have group qualifying the first two rounds and then the last round let it just be like the fast 12 single car qualifying?
I wouldn't have a problem. I hadn't heard that from Denny, but that's, sounds like a decent idea.
Yeah, I think that's the idea I think they should have went with, kind of like how they do an IndyCar, like let them have their fast 12 and kind of let the single cars, because it's not going to take that long for 12 cars to go out and run two laps and do their qualifying. So, I don't see why they can't compromise on doing two rounds of group qualifying and then one final round of just single car qualifying.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of, this and that, but the aero package that we have with drafting, it's just difficult on a mile and a half track.
Yeah.
Or more.
Yeah, and it hasn't really changed. For me personally, seeing the aero package compared to now, as a fan and somebody who watches the racing, I don't see too much of a difference. I mean, I guess there's more passing, but a leader kind of gets away and gets into clean air and kind of just gets away from the field.
Yeah, he's gone, and on the bigger tracks, it inhibits passing.
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
It's kind of like,
you get to a car, you can't pass it.
Yeah, I don't feel like so much downforce and these kind of restricted engines, I don't feel like it promotes passing more. I feel like if you have more horsepower, you have more drivers who are kind of less willing to overdrive the car with more horsepower, so they kind of have to let off, and that kind of stabilizes the gap a little bit.
Yeah, it's when you artificially try to do something, it's difficult.
Yeah, and
monitoring it, what I see that we're going to do in Texas, probably the biggest help I see is, you start moving out, you got to continue to go on out.
Yeah.
And you can't block that center aisle. But outside of that, it's going to be really difficult to monitor what goes on in the track or who may be interfering with somebody else's lap.
Yeah.
As I said, you can't impede or block. Well, how are you going to call that?
Yeah. I mean, it's really quite arbitrary to what is and isn't a block. I guess if you move down a lane and there's a car in that lane and he has to swerve back up, then would you be able to call that a block? Because it's so hard to, tell who's blocking and who's not and who's just trying to get off the track, I would think.
That's my whole point.
Yeah.
Is he may be moving down there to where that guy can get a better draft off of you.
Yeah. It's definitely difficult. Overall, I am kind of on the side of, I didn't think there was anything wrong with the qualifying the way they were when they just kind of went out and ran single cars. I kind of like that because while, yes, it was a little bit more tape delayed and you didn't get to see everybody's full lap, it kind of eliminated the whole element of it being arbitrary on having to be the fourth car in line. So I don't know personally. But, NASCAR kind of wants to make it a bit more exciting, and I get that. But overall, it all comes down to me. If it ain't broke, don't fix it,
Yeah, there's a lot of money spent on qualifying speed and getting the car ready for qualifying.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yes, it really is. And that's not how we race. So last year I was talking to O'Donnell and some of them, and I said, hey, I'm for more come to the track, unload, let us have a practice session, go qualify single, and then impound.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
just like we did at Martinsville.
Yeah.
So your qualifying is the same as your race.
Yeah. Why try and like make two things similar, I guess. Race how you qualify, I guess.
Yeah,
but
that's the point. What is, you know, qualifying is trying to see who can spend more money to make a one fast lap. Well, that's all well and good, but that's not what happens on Sunday.
No, absolutely not. And I feel the qualifying and the racing are supposed to be different. Like I would much rather see a more accurate qualifying form or lineup than going out and seeing another race. There's already like on most weekends, there's already three races I'm going to see. If I want to see qualifying, you know, I just kind of want to see who's the fastest.
Right. If you're going to do that, right, I agree. Don't make it luck.
Yeah.
Where it happened to be, oh, we were just lucky. We were the fourth in line and got behind it. No, make it because you worked hard. Why take a team, exclude us, a Stuart Haas or a Penske or a Joe Gibbs, really, really fast car, and why put luck in their hands of qualifying instead of we work for this?
Yeah.
We want to run a lap.
Yeah. It seems like they need to go. I think they would need to go back to the drawing board completely on qualifying. Hopefully, with the new changes we're going to see, not only with that, but with the schedule, hopefully they'll kind of address that here in the near future. But kind of to move on a little bit with the schedule, I'm hearing that they have made some tweaks or some new changes, moving the Coke Zero 400 from 4th of July weekend. I think they're moving it, and it's going to be Indianapolis now is what I'm hearing. That's sure. The rumor.
I stayed away for – I haven't even seen somebody yesterday, a friend of mine in North Carolina, because I had just got back to Texas here yesterday afternoon and texted me, you know, this lineup, you know, Daytona, West Coast Swing, Atlanta, and then a few more things.
Yeah.
Pocono, two race weekend.
Yeah, I think there's a 2-week break as well they're talking about for the Olympics.
Okay, didn't see that. So I've read, and I just kind of, I wasn't going to get any preconceived at 4 o'clock this afternoon, I guess. Is that the time they're going to release it?
I think so. I think that's their target time, but it's so hard to release something at a certain time with the internet. You know, everything just comes out all kind of at once. And
oh, yes.
It's very difficult.
Y'all get it, you know, the news and all, get it before we do.
Yeah.
So.
That's kind of surprising. I thought like they would be a little bit more NASCAR, and them would kind of be more instrumental, like with the people that are work, like kind of in their business. I thought they would kind of know first. Like I figured maybe NASCAR would say, "Hey, we're making some changes," and they would tell like the drivers and the owners first.
Well, we generally hear it when you hear it.
Really?
You know, we're going to make an announcement tomorrow about this. Okay.
So that's go ahead.
Sometimes they do. So it's kind of random. Sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
Sometimes we, you know, give them our opinion, then they ask for our opinion, and then something else happens.
Yeah.
And we go, where'd that come from?
Yeah, it seems like it. A lot of the stuff they plan to announce and the big changes they plan to announce, nobody really knows about but them, I would imagine.
Yeah, and they, you know, we will say be it a team owners council meeting and, you know, just NASCAR owners.
Yeah.
And, you know, sworn to secrecy, okay, not say anything. Then before we get out, it's on the street.
Yeah. It's like, extremely hard to keep anything under wraps happen. Nowadays.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Like, okay.
But
so obviously there's a lot of people that work in NASCAR.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who work, I mean, in NASCAR itself, the sanctioning body, a lot of people work on the team, so yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. So go ahead.
It's just the nature. There's just a lot of drama. As yeah. You well know in NASCAR.
Yeah, it's extremely dramatic.
Yep. That's the first thing, our first year of just running 8 races after a couple, maybe just the first race at Texas Motor Speedway, being in the garage, Sharon, my wife, said, man, we don't have that much drama in our company. This what I see here.
Yeah,
no,
it's crazy.
No, we're not used to the drama, but and I'm not sure after 9 years. You're used to it, you just kind of overlook it.
Yeah, you never really know, too. It's kind of the element of surprise, I guess, and it's very unexpected. But like, personally, going back kind of to the change that I'm hearing about with Indianapolis moving to 2020, or moving to the July 4th race on 2020, like, I personally don't like the fact that they're moving away from what made that race special in Daytona.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean it's July. I went to that race back in 2009, I believe, and I used, like, a lot of these fans kind of plan around that whole time to go to that race, and it kind of takes away with what's kind of great about the sport with tradition and everything. I kind of wanted to get your opinion on that.
You know, well, you talking about the Daytona 4th of July race?
Yes, sir.
I'm kind of partial because we finished fourth there 1 year,
yeah,
in July, and had a chance to win it.
Yeah.
And just made a wrong move and block. Essentially, we got up in front and we got the slow car instead of getting up in Menard and get the fast car.
Yeah. Was that the last year with Kane?
No, it was with McDowell.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
3 years ago, I think. Now, Casey, you know, we really had a similar situation.
Yeah, he was leading. I really thought he was going to win the race. I thought
yes,
that
we
was going to be his.
We were leading with eight. Was it eight? Eight to go?
I think in that 10-lap area, he had a cleaner car than most of the field in that race, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
So.
And didn't. So, anyway.
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
Really?
Race and, you know, going there. But, again, that's traditional. But me also, if I was going to do anything at Indy, I would say let us run the road course there.
I actually wrote about that when NASCAR had that Roval. I said, why not run Indy, the Roval at Indy, you know? Like,
absolutely. I totally agree. It's like, this is a cool course. And our crowds there, I think, would even more people would come.
Yeah, I think it would be new too, and it would be a little bit more difficult for the drivers to manage, you know, going into turn one backwards. You know, it would be really kind of different, and I'd love to see him race the Roval in Indy.
Because, you know, we said about that, about the, you know, Roval in Charlotte, but, and I was one of those, oh, this is going to be a you know what show.
Yeah.
And only. Well, I think we wound up finishing 15th, but that was kind of by attrition also. Because poor Regan Smith, he didn't even get to practice because we tested there with Casey.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he got sick. And so then we put Regan in the car. And then on Saturday practice, we dropped a motor. Missed the gear going out to practice. So we sat, and he only got 10 or 12 laps to practice before the race on Sunday.
Yeah.
So we just said, hey, man, just kind of stay out of trouble. Because we changed the engine, so we're starting back anyway.
Yeah.
So just get the feel of the track, and then little by little, use your how you feel about it.
Yeah. And he...
You know, and
came through and had a good, like you said, a 15th place finish.
Yeah, but, you know, just because of the big, we happened to be far enough behind the big turn or crash there in turn one.
Yeah.
And drove through it and missed it.
Yeah, and that takes a certain amount of skill, I would think, too, to
sure.
kind of.
No, he was, you know, Rig is a great kid and great, you know, good friend and great driver. But we were just fortunate to be far enough back. We didn't go piling in there like everybody else.
Yeah. It seemed like nobody really knew what to do in that last lap. Ooh. Like, everybody just followed Brad Keselowski off the cliff, like they were
right
saying.
Right into the wall.
Yeah. That was a crazy race. And to add more Rovals, I think, would be awesome. Like, one of the ideas I had was, like, why not, if you're going to run two races at the same track, why not run one where it's the oval and then run another where it'd be the roval. Like, I know they could do that at Texas.
Yes. Well, I totally agree. Or go to Austin.
Yeah, Circuit of the Americas. I was just there this weekend for the IndyCar race.
I've never been there, but I understand it's phenomenal.
It's a beautiful facility. You got to do a lot of walking, but it's a beautiful facility.
Yeah, kind of like Watkins Glen. You do a lot of walking.
I really got to get up to Watkins Glen one of these days. That's one of the tracks I've kind of had on my list to visit. But, yeah.
It's a great track. As far as road course, my favorite road course is Sonoma.
Yeah.
Because I found a place on the infield that I can see three quarters of the track.
Yeah.
In Watkins Glen, you just got to find where you want to watch from.
Yeah. One good place at Circuit of the Americas, if you ever go for like one of the races to sit and get to see the whole part of the track, I heard turn 12 is really good. And obviously they have that big observatory tower where you can watch all of it. But, yeah, turn 12, from what I heard, was really good.
Okay. But I think, more road course periods, whether it's up in, mid-Ohio, wherever.
Yeah, or Road Atlanta or Barber.
Exactly. Road Atlanta, I understand, is really cool.
Yeah.
So, we have options. But, obviously it's just going to be some in 2020, maybe the 21 comes out with the, Gen 7 and it changes more. Gen 7 is more than just a car change. It's, I think, other things.
Yeah. I'm kind of looking forward to the Gen 7 with what they can do and just kind of the changes. Maybe they stray away from this massive downforce package where there's all corner speeds. That's what I'm kind of hoping for. But overall, it should be very interesting with all these changes. I mean, they're saying it's going to be a new NASCAR next year. So
interesting.
Yeah. They're saying there's all kinds of news that's coming out with Pocono and everything, and where they'd have two twin races, I think, and a 2-week break. They're saying they might move the finale to Phoenix.
Yes, I heard that.
So that's definitely interesting. I'm sure Kevin Harvick will really appreciate that.
I have no problem moving that around as well as our All-Star race.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, one person, I think some Jeff Gluck or Matt Weaver, one of the journalists, they suggested why not rotate the season finale? You don't kind of cater to one type of
Make
driver.
Make them bid really on good. It.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be
the Super Bowl.
That would be hilarious. That would be awesome. It would be just like the Super Bowl. That's a great idea. I never would have thought about that, but that would be a good idea. One year it can be Texas. One year it can be maybe Darlington or who
that
knows.
Way you get the community involved in. Hey, we need to promote this. Come out to see it. Why not? That's what they do in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Or the Olympics.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, and what another thing they could possibly think about, maybe running the Daytona Roval as well. Maybe we could see the Daytona road course.
I've had people in our organization, in fact, maybe my grandson who did a lot of SCCA open wheel, he's our comp director, Michael, said, man, what's wrong with the Daytona?
Yeah, I see nothing. I mean, I'm shocked they haven't thought about doing that already, maybe for like an exhibition, but... But that they have a perfectly good Roval there, and it would be really interesting to watch.
I think it may be, but I think you just have to kind of get away from what we've always done.
Yeah.
Mindset.
Yeah, and to some degree, some changes would be good. Some new tracks, some new road courses. But I feel like in a sense, there's certain things that really kind of make NASCAR special. And like I was saying, to kind of tie it all together, running the Labor Day race at Darlington and the Memorial Day Coke 600 and all those races, I think those should always be kind of a cornerstone for NASCAR.
My only disagreement with you, I think we need to call it the Coke 400.
Yeah, that makes sense too.
You need to sit there for 600 miles.
Yeah,
appreciate what I'm telling you.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's extremely. I agree with you. I think it should be the Coke 400 too. Like I think the reason why they I think why they did that in the first place was to kind of compete with Indy and have like an extra 100 miles. But now, like, since everything's kind of a little bit more topsy-turvy in NASCAR's favor, they can run like a Coke 400 or a Coke 500.
Yeah, because you know our young people, our young kids are not going to sit that long.
No. Absolutely not. Back when I was younger and stuff, I would always kind of have it on one TV and I would kind of just play my like PS3 and stuff and kind of just back and forth. But yeah, a lot of these younger kids have shorter attention spans, and 600 miles is just too long. I agree with you there.
Yeah, and we want them to bring the younger, you know, kids to the track. We don't want to wear them out.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely not.
Family. But man, can you imagine the, you know, family coming, and it's pretty difficult.
Yeah.
But, you know, it can be a really good race. And we've done kind of well there over the years.
Yeah.
We put good cars together, and so we last.
I think that was one of the first races y'all ran as well with David Starr back in 2011, if I remember correctly.
I remember it. I mean, like it was yesterday, because when the year before, when I was talking to Casey about getting in our car, we went and had lunch and, you know, got together. And I said, you know, I'm going to tell you right off. First time we came, which was our second race with Charlotte after we opened our history with TMS.
Yeah.
And he put it in the wall, I don't know, lap 187 or something, just by himself. He lost in the wall.
Yeah, it seemed like y'all were trying to run the whole race, if I remember correctly.
Well, yeah, we were. I was stupid, and we were running all. Everything we did that year was the intent of running the whole race.
Yeah.
So we went to Charlotte, and he was doing pretty decent, except he wouldn't let Casey pass him, and we were a couple laps down. And Casey thought it, they was just blocking him. I mean, just literally, because when it happened, hadn't seen what happened. And Casey just put us in the turn four wall.
I think it was, it was off the dog leg in turn four, or like into the straightaway, and he kind of came down and Kane got into the back of him?
Yep.
I remember that, yeah. That was...
Casey, you know, until I said, so, you know, I'm still not really happy about it.
Yeah, I could understand that for sure.
Casey's kind of not knowing me very well. And, you know, Casey didn't know what to say. I said, hey, man, just kidding you, because I'd have done it a couple laps before.
Yeah, that's a really interesting tidbit. That's really something that I would – I mean, that's crazy. I had no idea that went on. I didn't remember that as well until you brought it up, but that's really cool that you remembered that and kind of – connected a little bit with Casey there.
Oh, yeah. So, because, I mean, I was mad at Casey for a couple of weeks until, you know, I really saw a replay of it and went, oh, my God, David, you can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you can't, we're two or three laps down. You don't block good drivers on the lead lap.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't until Bristol was our third race. We finished and we actually finished 27th. And David drove a great race at Bristol.
Yeah, and by the standards of kind of a new team, finishing 27th is really a big deal, I would think.
Yeah, that was back when there was a lot of cars.
Yeah, there was like 43, if I remember correctly.
Well, 43 was the correct number.
Yeah.
There was in the high 40s, because when we backed off our very first race in Texas, there was like 47, 48 cars.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
And we actually qualified.
Yeah. And that in itself is a big accomplishment, I would think,
as
well.
We had never tested. We had never had that car on the track. David had never driven a cup car until the Texas race we raced.
Yeah, I think I remember reading about that on J-Ski. That would be his debut.
It was. You're talking about rookie strikes, because then we couldn't test. We didn't have enough money to go rent a track and test ourselves.
Yeah.
And so we were really rookies and novices about that.
Yeah.
So tough skating the first year. We made our first four races, and missed the last four races.
Yeah, and that was a difficult time as well. I think what a lot of people don't remember, like 2011 through 2014, I think that was kind of when the cars were as close, if not the closest together than I'd ever seen in my lifetime.
Yeah, it was tough to make a race.
Yeah. So
in fact, the Woods brothers became really good friends of mine and are to this day, Lynn and Eddie. And they were running part-time schedule there with the 21 car.
Yeah, I think they had Ryan Blaney back then
point. Yeah, that was before even Blaney.
Yeah, it was Trevor Bayne, I think, at that point.
Trevor was in it, and I forget who was before that. And I remember going to Indy with Scott Speed and my grandson. We have an autistic grandson, and he loves racing. And
yeah.
We took him, and we didn't make the race. And, man, you're talking about broken hearted and having, you know, it's tough walking out of the garage.
Yeah, that's got to be a gut-wrenching feeling.
Oh, it is. That's exactly right. You know, I think it was, I cannot remember if it was Lynn or Eddie or both of them, walked over to him as we were packing up the hauler, and he says, "Hey, man, there's the next one." He says, "This has happened to us many times."
Yeah.
And I look up at them as they were my heroes.
Yeah, back with David Pearson and all those guys.
I wanted to run like 21 team
did. Yeah.
And so they became really good friends and supported us and still are really good friends. In fact, after 21 car wrecked us at Daytona, you know, I was mad at Paul for about 3 hours afterwards, driving back to Charlotte. And, you know, then got a text from Eddie, said, "Hey, man, this is so sorry." And, you know, I know we didn't mean to.
Yeah.
You know, there was no maliciousness in it, and I know Eddie or Wood wouldn't want him to, and they felt bad, and then they called me the next week, and so it's just one of those things in racing, and so just great folks they are.
Yeah, so to kind of, like, I guess to kind of wrap it up a little bit with these next two questions, last year y'all ran a great throwback paint scheme. I loved it. Loved that throwback paint scheme that Kane did at both the All-Star Race and Darlington. Do y'all plan on doing another throwback this year?
I'm sure they are. This is just telling the secret, because I am not the best paint scheme person in the world. I really appreciate all of our paint schemes, and that one in particular. We got some really good folks who have been in racing a long time. Our PR people, marketing, Jeremy, our VP, you know, Michael, our comp director, and they get their heads together, and I bet they're already working on it. And no, they just haven't shared it with me because they're afraid I'll show somebody.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. The one thing I really liked about that Darlington paint scheme that they ran, it reminded me a lot of I think it was the All-Star Race paint scheme. It reminded me kind of Hutch Strickland's 96 Circuit City car a little bit with the way the
yeah that all
oh, whoops.
Car.
Unplug my headphones.
That was awesome.
Well, sorry about that. What were you saying?
I said the All-Star paint scheme was really awesome.
Yeah, I really liked to see. And it's good that Dumont Jets and everybody were supportive kind of that throwback paint scheme, because it really looked good.
Yes. The only thing my wife didn't like, because she's our color coordinator for the numbers.
Oh, really?
She likes our yellow numbers.
I do too. That's kind of been a staple of the team for a while.
She
the
said,
yellow
that's
numbers.
Where we started.
Yeah.
And when Dumont didn't want yellow on there, she wasn't really happy.
Yeah, I could understand that.
So she acquiesced, and you know they're paying, so okay.
Yeah. So
she didn't like it, but okay.
So the million-dollar question, we've heard a lot of things going on, especially with, obviously, with the new technical alliance with you guys and Toyota, but I wanted to kind of get it from you first, you being the owner. Is there any chance that in 2020 or in the future, maybe not for a full-time schedule, or maybe so, but could we see LFR expand at some point?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Breaking news.
We actually talked about two cars last year.
Wow.
For this year.
That's great news to hear. I'm really excited about that, because I really like that 59 car. with McDowell drove.
You know, this is common knowledge. We were working with a driver, not to name, but we were JGR wanted us to try to get Daniel in our car.
Yeah.
Coach Gibbs, really liked Daniel and, wanted to give him a good ride, make sure he got a good ride. And so we were working with Daniel. I was working with Daniel's agent and TRD.
Yeah.
Wanted them. So we were working on a two-car deal, one with Daniel and then one with the driver that we had selected.
Yeah.
And it didn't turn out because when we didn't get Daniel, or let's put it this way, I needed a decision because I had Matt waiting also. Matt wanted to come.
Yeah.
And I really like Matt.
And he's a really big fan favorite as well.
Oh, and, I was a fan of Matt's for years.
Yeah.
Because, we would race beside him and we kind of come up through those same way that his 32 car. And so we raced around him a lot. And I liked his personality. I liked his drive and determination and the way he drove.
Yeah.
And I thought if we could get him in good equipment that he could move on up and, make another step. But in fact, we are working now.
Yeah.
About that possibility for 2020 already.
Wow. Well, I appreciate it. Oh, go ahead.
It's just a matter of sponsorship to get it on there because we got we can put the people on it.
Yeah.
We have the organization and TRD will support that because if you remember.
Hello?
TRD.
Oh, there you go.
Supported the four Gibbs cars.
Yeah. And then the Furniture Row cars.
77 and 78.
Yeah.
Then they mothballed in 78 when Jones went over to coach.
Yeah.
So they have that engine program because you just don't grab a bunch of more engines.
No. You got to, it takes time to develop.
That engine program was sitting there. We were scheduled to get that engine program before Furniture Row went out of business.
Wow. That's
so they were going to start that one and back up for us.
That's definitely, I didn't know that. That's definitely something. But y'all seem to have gotten a really good team behind you now, though, with the Alliance now. So it seems
the best group we've ever had and the best relationship groups we've ever had. They want us to do better, succeed. We got to do our part and work. But the resources there, they're helping us, the stuff that TRD does. But they, when it became evident last year that Furniture Row was not going to come back, that's when they offered us, hey, that second engine program, which was the 78 car.
Yeah.
So, we got one of them because we just wound up with the 95, and that other engine program is still there. And we've talked about it already to everybody, all in our alliance. And it's just a matter of working out the details and how do we fund it, who's going to be in it. And so there's a lot of speculation about that,
yeah,
obviously.
I heard a lot of speculation as well, and I look forward to seeing this teams expand because that's what this sport needs is kind of teams to expand and new drivers and everything. And I'm really glad to see this team begin to succeed, coming from 2011 and being a Texas team really kind of helps out as well.
Yeah, you ain't going to believe this, but I had some pushback from our organization because one of my original logo had State of Texas.
Oh, really?
Built around it. And then we have a second one with just, the Texas flag and the, red, white, and blue. And, checkered. So it, obviously you can tell it's from Texas.
Yeah.
But our marketing and PR people were concerned that sometimes us Texans offend people. So.
Yeah, I don't see what's too offensive about the Texas flag, though. That's I think that's one of the hallmarks of this country, I would think, this Texas flag.
To me, it's like mother flag and apple pie, man.
Yeah, it's a beautiful flag. Oh, what were you saying? Sorry about that.
I said, that's mother flag and apple pie, and I'm proud to be a Texan.
I appreciate that as a Texan. I'm sure a lot of the fans in Texas, kind of when they hear this interview, will really kind of get a good perspective on how it is to run a race team. And because this has been a great interview, probably the best interview I've ever done. And thank you so much for taking the time and talking with me. Like, I really appreciate it.
Trey, glad to do it. Glad to, talk about NASCAR, because it is a great sport and great people and our organization. I'm proud of everybody, and they work hard, and we're just going to continue to grind and claw and get the best finishes we can get.
All right. Well, more than likely, I'll be seeing you at Texas Motor Speedway. I'll be there this weekend. So have a good
great
run.
Night. Please do, and come up and say hi.
For sure.
And appreciate the call, Trey.
Anytime. Thank you so much for joining me.
Okay.
All right.
See you later.
See you later.
Bye.